Crouch. Bind. Set.
Joe presents The House of Rugby, Season 3.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe. Our guests for this week, Jonathan Davis, and back for more is Sean O'Brien. Jonathan, I'm going to start with you because obviously you listened to last week's podcast with great interest. But Adam and Sean, they weren't unkind, but Adam basically said that you were going to toe the party line, not give us anything great. Sean was a little bit more complimentary, mostly about your tan and your hair. So have the right of the reply.
I think I got, the two boys had the head start on me and, Bomb being Bomb, I think he's set me up for a fail and, I'll take Shawnee's words and I'll try and do as best I can, I'm glad he likes the hair. He's still using the wet look gel I think I had when I was 11 years old, Shawnee.
It's actually called Brill Cream.
Brill Cream, yeah.
Brill Cream. The one in the red tub. Do you remember the one in the red tub, actually?
Or a big scoop and then slap it on, is it?
Yeah. You'd have to wash the hands after too.
I think my grandfather was using that, I think. But how are you, Shawnee, all right?
I'm good, yeah, and you? How's things coming along?
Not too bad. Obviously picked up a bump against your fellow countrymen a few weeks back, but back in training this week now, so it's not as bad as I thought. So what about you? With like two old injured...
Yeah,
this is like an players. Episode of Casualty.
Injured again.
Yeah,
we
just need flashing blue lights. What happened?
I actually played the full 80, felt perfect, and then on Tuesday went to train and calf was very tight, so had a scan and gave my soleus a fairly significant tear, and it's a weird one actually because I had no symptoms until I actually went out and started running, and I was bitterly disappointed during the week because felt great. In the lead up to the Worcester game as well, I was I only had 1 week's prep because I was in isolation for 2 weeks because I was in close contact. So that definitely had a factor to playing it. So you can only train in the house on a watt bike.
Were you doing that burpee challenge again? That's all I remember from lockdown is you doing burpees.
I left that off this time. My back was broke after that, honestly. I don't know why I started it, genuinely. But I'm glad I finished it, actually. There's so many things going on during lockdown, but I was actually glad of it. I got 178 or something in 20 minutes.
John, when are you coming back? When will you be fit? You said you're going to play this week.
Training this week and then depending on selection. So we'll see how we go. I hopefully like to get back in the team.
On selection. Sure, who else is going to play there at the minute?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm only asking sort of out of selfishness as well because I thought that you were joining me on Channel 4 for... the first Champions Cup match, but that doesn't sound likely.
No, well, hopefully I can. I think we got Bath the same day, so occupied. Hopefully playing down in the Rec, hopefully in front of crowds, which is exciting.
That would be nice.
Leaders, one thing you have to know about Foxy is cash is king. Cash is king. give him enough cash and he'll leave the game off.
That's actually a good Scottish attitude. I like that.
That's why he's into all these horses now at the minute as well. He's a very good horse at the minute.
That's not money
we've
making.
We've all got race horses, but I don't think they make money. Finn Russell's got, who's coming on the programme later, he's got a leg in a race horse as well. You've had horses, Sean, have you not?
Yeah, I've had a few as well, yeah. You get the odd good one, but you get a lot of donkeys too, so.
Foxy's is a very good one.
Yeah. Any shares going, Foxy?
No shares. He's all tied up, unfortunately. But, I think he might run in a few weeks and hopefully might take him to Cheltenham, give a go in the festival. So not an exclusive, but, fingers crossed. He
did the cross country, didn't he, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, and he did well. He enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I think that's something Christian, the horse trainer, wants to look at. So, we'll probably talk about more about that close to the time.
Will you go back for the... I know we're meant to talk rugby, but I actually don't care at this stage. Will you go back for the Welsh National again?
Not sure. I think he was like... he was almost, you know, crippled after that race because it's such a testing race. And we'd love to give him a proper shot at the Grand National. So maybe we might leave that this year and then let him rest up and get fresh, ready to go for the Grand National. So, you know, it's none of my decision, but I'll just listen to Christian. He's the wizard of it all.
You need a good jockey, Foxy. Give me a shout.
Yeah. Who do you know, Ed? I wouldn't put you on the back of him. I remember I got sent a photo of my brother on top of Potter and I was literally mortified. I thought he'd break his back.
Yeah, get him down off it. Too heavy.
All right, I suppose we should talk about some rugby, actually. Nigel Owens was heralded at the weekend because he reffed his 100th test match. But it was another referee in Romain Poit who actually took the headlines. It was in the Wales match. Dan Biggar looked like he was clearly taken out in the air. The TMO calls it in, but he was overruled. And then I think Alan Wynne-Jones went up and said, take a look at that. And Romain Poit said, no, we're not going to take a look at it. I know that Wayne Pivac has contacted World Rugby about it, he said in his interview afterwards. What did you make of it, John?
Look, you know, Biggs looks like he's taken in the air. That's pretty obvious. And, unfortunately, Romain doesn't go back and have a look at it, you know. And I think, the try does come from that turnover. And we're not saying that it would have changed the results, but, you know, I think it was, Biggs got tackled in the air and it should have been a penalty at least, you know. So, it was hugely disappointing, but I think, you know, what you got to remember is that, you know, heat of the moment, refs are taking on a lot and you don't know whether you just want to get on with the game or you don't know. But from a Welsh perspective, it was hugely disappointing that, you know, something that you could see what happened. It wasn't we were given the penalty.
It's absolutely madness, though. It's something that's a bugbearer for me, these type of decisions, because you have... You know, you have a clear try scored in certain games and they're going upstairs to check it. You have someone taken out in the air. The video ref is saying he's taken out in the air. He's taken out in the air, Romain. And he's basically closed his ears to it. That's a penalty. So for players, no wonder Welsh players and Irish players, and I've had it in the past before, we get so frustrated because the consistency is all over the place. Someone like Nigel, and massive kudos to him for reaching his 100 at the weekend, but he's very consistent in the way he referees every game. Sometimes he has off days, and as we all do, you know, we're human at the end of the day, but rules are the rules. And big decisions in games like that do have consequences, to everyone involved. So, I don't know why he doesn't listen to his the fourth official there. And call it a penalty. That's what it was at the time. He's taken in the air. It's a penalty. End of story. But he just ignored it. And I actually like Romain Poit. Everyone, I remember years ago doing analysis of games when you were with Leinster. And everyone would be like, do not speak to Romain Poit. The coaches would say, don't speak to Romain Poit. I go to the coaches afterwards, goes, I'll speak to him. I like him. I get on well with him. I have a good relationship with him on the field. And I always do, and I always like Romain Poit, but he definitely got that one wrong at the weekend, I felt.
Yeah. Like you said, I enjoy his company as well. I have this thing, obviously, when he was a ref, when I was out in France, he'd ref more of the league games, and now whenever he's reffing us, I'd throw a little bit of my broken French in, and he'd always think shut up because it's terrible French and stuff, and you'd have a decent relationship with him. And, you know, it's like you said, human errors come in, but, you know, he should have... Yeah. You know, trusted his fourth official. That's what they're there for. And you know, even if he went back and watched it, and he said no, he wasn't taken out. You know, at least he gives it a chance to reassess it and not have the heat of the moment take over. Really,
I don't really know how it works in terms of that TMO. Can he not sort of push a little bit harder? And you know, is he only allowed one call to the ref to suggest it?
I don't know, because he went back for the Welsh try. He said that, is it a knock-on instead of a charge down? And Romain said, no, that for me is a charge down. So, you know, they went back and looked at that and then he overruled it. And whether or not that then, the lack of trust maybe, you don't know, whether he thought, no, I made the decision, I'm just going to back myself. But, unfortunately from a Welsh perspective, it was, we felt it was the wrong call.
I'd wonder if the stadium was full. Would the pressure of the crowd, would, you know what I mean, the atmosphere there, the referees feel that definitely on days. I wonder, would he have went, hold on, let me check this. Like, when you make an error in that stadium, you'd know about it pretty quickly.
oh, you do, even if you're a Welsh person does.
Yeah, exactly, which is strange. Like, I wonder if the crowd was there. I've said it before about like captains and stuff. They don't have as big an influence because they can't get away with chatting to the referee as much without the crowd there and saying little bits and pieces to him as we go through the game. So that probably had a factor to play in as well, because Alan Wynn doesn't want to keep pushing him and annoying him. I remember years ago against England, against the E-Foxy in Dublin, and I was reviewing the game. Wayne Barnes was the referee. And all you can hear me, Adam, the whole game is just squealing at him. Release, hands away. You know, and they're off the their crowd, feet.
With the crowd, they might not hear that chatter. I do the same. Like, he's holding. And Nigel Owens hates it, because I think whenever he refs a derby, that's all he hears is like, us boys like getting into him, making the decision. You know, it's difficult with a crowd. It's like background noise. But when there's no crowd, obviously they hear what all the boys are saying. You know,
I always say to referees, I'm trying to help them referee the game as best I can. I'm only giving them a hand. I'm not trying to be annoying.
Yeah.
It is a thankless job, though. In many ways, they're very rarely getting great press. It's either maybe Wayne Barnes speaking two languages and in a match gets a bit of coverage, or Nigel 100 gets a coverage. Otherwise, we tend to talk about referees when there has been an error. I just wonder what both of you look for in a referee. What makes good refereeing? Is it like consistency or communication?
Yeah, I think that's the main one, really, is consistency. When you go on the field, you know what you're going to get. You want them to be approachable. I think, you know, certain players, just query certain decisions and not like having a go or anything. They just would like to know. And if you're not a captain and you can't approach a ref, it almost builds you up your frustration, because you're not like you're shouting at him. You just want a clarification on something, because you don't want to do the same thing twice and get banged twice for it, you know? So, it's consistency and being approachable for me. I think that's two keys for referees.
Yeah, I'd agree completely too. As players, that's the frustrating part, when you have a really good game one week and the ref has done his job and he's abided to the laws that are there for him to enforce in the game. And then the following week you go out and another referee has a different interpretation of those laws. And that's not consistent. So for me as well, it's definitely the consistency and someone who is approachable. You don't want a referee that's telling you to go away when you are trying to actually, there might be something that you haven't seen, but you're asking the referee, what was that for, sir? And he's just waving you away. As Foxy said, you don't want to be going back to your team with your hands in the air going, he won't tell me, or he won't talk to me even. So I don't know, it's definitely something that I think for us players, we like talking to referees and we like an open line of communication rather than being blanked anyway. At least we can learn that and move forward and crack on with the game.
And it get better as well, because obviously, you know, you speak to touch judges when like teams are going for penalties, and you'll ask a touch judge, you know, what was that call for? And you think it's right. And, you know, they'll just be like, whoa, no, I'm over here out the way. You know, I'm just holding the flag, you know. So, it's just, I think, you just want to have a good time, because obviously, you know, when you're playing, you're enjoying it. We're very lucky to, you know, play international rugby. And, you know, it's not that we want to create enemies. We want to make the experience as good for everyone as possible, you know.
Sean, you mentioned the relationship with Romain Poit, but do teams analyse look at the ref before they're taking on a game, not just the opposition? Does it actually matter?
Oh, it absolutely matters, because for someone like Romain Poit, for instance, he's very hot in the breakdown. And he might have trends of giving a penalty to a certain team within the first minute for not rolling away, for instance. That could be his thing at the start of a game that he has in his head. I want to make sure the ruck is clean. Whereas someone like Nigel will let teams battle it out there. And whoever wins kind of collisions, you know that that's going to be the way it is for the day. So there is different interpretations, and at international level, not that I'm there now, but Foxy, they're definitely still analysing referees and making sure that the things that the refs are really hot on consistently over their previous games are the players are aware of them and know going into the game, lads, these are the few things we need to watch here. Leave him alone. If he's a referee that's not approachable, leave him alone. Don't be chatting to him. Don't be annoying him. Don't be harassing him. So it's a big part of the game as well, because he, at the end of the day, is the man in the middle and he's trying to control 30 rugby players. And it is a difficult job. Like, I wouldn't do it for diamonds. Because I'm probably looking at younger lads coming up now and saying, I hope they're not like me when I was coming up along and squealing at the referees and basically pestering them for the whole 80 minutes. I mean, actually, on the flip side of that as well, Lee, I think it takes away from your game sometimes. I found like that Welsh game in Dublin, the one that I got really frustrated with, when I look back on my own personal performance, I was distracted. I was, I was too busy with Wayne Barnes, trying to help him referee the game, as I'm calling it. But it took away from my own game a little bit. So it's an area, I suppose, where you have to let the referee do their job, but they have to be approachable as well, and they have to know the rules of the game and be consistent, is what we want.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, there's so much work going on from analysing refs' tendencies, whether they favour defence penalties or attack penalties. And you know, going into a game, you're aware of where they might set a precedent, like contact area or offside lines, stuff like that. So, you know, you got a heads up before you go on the field what they tend to look at as a tendency.
Or if you're Wales, you just cheat as much as you can. in every facet of the game.
We just copy what you guys do in the breakdown. That's all we're doing.
Yeah, as I said, being a referee is a thankless task. I think we can all agree on that one. Okay, I'm interested in your thoughts on whether sport, and particularly rugby, has a responsibility to be entertaining. There's so much, particularly during this Autumn Nations Cup, in the press, on, you know, topics on different websites and things. John, what do you think?
I think it's difficult because at Test Rugby, I think there's such fine margins, and you know, the little mistake giving teams an easy into the 22 to opportunity to score. So there's less scope for you to, you know, obviously try out. I think, you know, as a team, we're almost in a bit of a transition, trying to play a new style of play, be a bit more expansive and attacking, but we're still developing that at the moment. But I think when you come up against teams like England who are very kick heavy, you've almost got to match them, because you're setting yourself up for fail if you're just going to run from anywhere, because mistakes will happen. You give away the ball, turnovers, and they get good field position. I think teams just don't want to give up field position in this game, because it's, you know, I think there is a want to play, but there's a cautiousness to everything as well. And I think that cautiousness has taken over the chance to express yourself, which is, it's difficult, but I think it's just how Test Rugby is. It's been like that for a while now, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at Test level whether you win the game by 50 or by a point at the end of the day, to teams. And like, there's not too many teams out there that can go and really express themselves that well every day, every time they go out to a Test match. The All Blacks can do it at times. And like, I was kind of thinking about that as Foxy's talking there. The risk to reward is massive in the game nowadays. And like, defense is one of the biggest things rather than attack at the minute. So if you have a good defense, you 9 times out of 10, you probably win the game, because you get the ball back, because you get field position, because you get into good areas of the field. So it's a funny one to see how it'll play out over the next while. But I have thought about the All Blacks a little bit, about the way they're able to change their attacking game to suit different oppositions. And I remember the first Lions test, Foxy, the way they played off 9, really, really tight to the ruck.
Yeah.
The first test. And we were prepping all week. We were prepping all week for them to play off 10. And we were going to get, we were going to force him back and back and back and deeper and deeper. The next minute the game starts and these boys have come up with something we've never seen before. And they're able to use straight up the guts, and they're able to use little tip-ons right at the line, inside and outside of the main carrying threat. And it was like a shock to the system because you don't know how to adapt to that. And they're probably the ones that do evolve a little bit quicker than everyone else. Then everyone else tries to catch up with them and say, "Oh, that's a good idea. Let's try that." But it takes a while. As Foxy's saying there, they're in a transition. Ireland are in a transition period at the minute, trying to play a little bit more. And England, as you said, are very kick-heavy. England kicked more than any other in the Six Nations. But it works for them because they do force people into making errors, and they do force teams to drop a ball. And with their D that they have as well, and the players they have within their D system, you know, they don't lose too many collisions, and they're able to slow teams up and, you know, get into an arm wrestle with them.
I think if you have a good defence, that's, you know, it's foundations for a great team. Like, if you can almost guarantee that your defence is going to hold the opposition to, say, 15, 16 points, then your attack doesn't have to fire. There's no pressure on you to go, right, if you're going to give away 25 points, you've got to go out and score 26 points. I think it's, you know, there's so much emphasis on D and containing the opposition. And then on the flip side, then you're making sure that you, you know, make sure you play in the right areas. And, if it doesn't come off, then you're just going to, it's coming to bite you in the arse then, really. So it's a difficult one to get a balance. And I think, you know, we all want to go out and play. But I think, like Shawnee said, the most important thing is winning. And at the moment, being without the ball is sometimes more effective.
It's interesting, though. When Jamie George got his hat trick, everyone's like, "Oh well, you know, he made about 10 meters or something." And then Johnny May goes and scores that one try against Ireland, and everyone is sort of waxing lyrical about it. I think there's an awful lot of how a try is scored as well that deems whether it's entertaining or not. Do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I do think. But you know, you look at that try Johnny May got. It was absolutely terrible defence by Ireland.
Yeah.
So like, they should never score from their own 22. So you look at that side of it straight away as a spectator and as someone who's been in that situation. You look at, well, where did we go wrong there? Okay, we got flat footed and got done on the outside. And when Johnny May gets into a bit of space, he's gone. Like, so you look at it from that aspect. From an English point of view, yeah, brilliant. They scored from their 22. From an Irish point of view, terrible defence to let him score from the 22. So there is, like, there obviously is touches of class by different teams and little plays to do and long phases of play that leads to tries that are absolutely incredible to watch. But something like that, I wouldn't class that as a good try. I'd class that as terrible defending.
Yeah, you could tell the tries that are constructed on the training ground. Like, I remember whenever we play Ireland, like, there's an emphasis on, you know, first three phases in defence, because Ireland were, like Leinster, were always good at set play moves, and, you know, we'd always be on red alert in those first three phases because they'd always try something. And once we got into a multi-phase against Ireland, we'd not be more comfortable, but we knew that their main threat was the first three phases. And, you know, I think it's just how you prep for a team and, you know, how team's traits are. And, like, yeah, those tries that are three phases planned on a training park are far, far more clinically done then.
But you both watched the internationals at the weekend. So, in honesty, like, did you find them boring, Foxy?
Frustrating. I think from a playing point, I think you appreciate the attritional nature of the game. I think the Wales England game was like a physical test match. There was probably a lack of ambition. But I think, you know, Wales England games are never high scoring affairs, you know, like that. They're just tight battles, and that was a proper test match. And you know, you look at Ireland, Georgia put up a little bit of a fight to start with. They scored a great try, but then, as Shawnee probably alluded to about the Johnny May try, he'd probably say the Georgia try was bad defense, you know. So there is stuff that has to go hand in hand with those games.
Yeah, I like looking at those games at the weekend, and there is an element of frustration, obviously, and you can see it from a spectator's point of view, like, that it's oh, Jesus, there's nothing really happening here. It's nearly like you're looking at a paint drying at times. But it's it is what it is at that level. And like I know Ireland will be fuming over the weekend about like their performance, especially in the second half. But like the Georgians, in fairness to them, have improved a lot and are absolutely humongous.
No.
Like it's like having 15 back rowers or 15 second rowers on the field when you see some of those boys. So they are hard and they are it's not easy to manage them. But Ireland, like with their quality they have, should have probably put a lot more points on them. But yeah, they did create that try. But again, you look back on that and you pull it apart and you go, you know, we just off the beaten D again. But he done well to finish it.
It was a great finish. And yeah, those men are bred to fight, those Georgians. We had a couple in Claremont and we'd end up doing wrestling. And Zirakashvili, the tight end, I don't know if you remember him, Sean.
Yeah, I remember him, yeah.
We'd end up doing wrestling and it was my go to go against him. And I was on top of him. And then before I could blink, he was on top of me. An absolute monster of a bloke. Fair play to him.
Them boys be wrestling animals during everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't mess with them.
No. 100%.
Do you think they've done enough to be in a, I don't know, whether it's going to be a Six Nations, Seven Nations, this constant conversation of whether it should be them or Italy? From what you've seen over the last few weeks, are they better than Italy? I mean, they hadn't scored a point until Sunday against Ireland.
I don't know if they're better than Italy, obviously, but, you know, I think the more time they get together, I'd love to know how long they're in camp for instance. Mm-hmm. And be able to perform like they've performed in the two games they've played. But like, do they deserve a chance? Absolutely. But, you know, the development of the game as a whole over there, like, needs to be looked at first and foremost and make sure they have that longevity if they are coming into that competition to keep producing, you know, good athletes, good players that are going to compete and not just go in there and get spanked every week. You know, that's not good for the game and it's not good for them either.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's, you know, it's making sure that they can start, you know, the ground up. And I think, you know, not losing all their players to foreign clubs and stuff like that would be a start. Yeah. And, you know, I think they are developing and they are getting better, which is good to see. And, you know, it's just time I think they need is to maintain their development.
So you mentioned working from the ground up. It's interesting to know what will happen to try and keep participation levels up, because I'm sure a lot of kids might be watching rugby at the weekends and they might not want to be the next John Davis or Sean O'Brien, because how do you encourage a kid to get their hand on the ball when you're seeing a very different style of rugby, particularly to what their parents have played as well? How do you sort of encourage that, John?
It's a good question. I think, you know, we need to make sure that, you know, when there's opportunities, to come to play and, you know, you have to be more accurate on the field and stuff. There is a responsibility as players to make sure that, you know, people want to be involved in the game. And I think, you know, hopefully soon enough crowds come back and atmospheres come. And then that makes a game, far, far better as well. You know, I think it is difficult at the moment with no crowds, generating that intensity and atmosphere that we had, you know, we're used to. And I think I remember going to Cardiff to watch a Wales game when I was a kid, and it was, you know, the big stadium, the noise, singing the anthem. And I think, you know, not saying it's just the players putting on the field, but like that whole experience to come back would be amazing. So I think as players, you know, we do try, you know, our very best in the week, trying to put a product on the field that's entertaining. You know, sometimes it doesn't come off, but I think it's the perseverance, like we are at the moment, just to, you know, keep building and improving, especially from a Welsh point of view. We're trying to get better and, you know, it's almost like a work in progress, really.
But Sean, that surely is a world rugby job to make it more entertaining, do you think?
Yeah, it probably is. They'll probably have a look at the game again soon and, you know, knowing world rugby, they'll probably change a few bits and pieces, but if it helps the game get a little bit more exciting, great. Like, as players, as Foxy's alluded to there, you're never going out at the weekend with a plan to just play boring rugby or to not entertain or to not score tries. as players, we want to do that. We always say it during the weeks in our clubs and for our countries. We want to go out and score tries. But as we've alluded to earlier in the program, it's 1 point will do us to win by. So when you're out there and you've 15 lads coming charging at you, and you're meeting them head on, you know what I mean? It's easy for you to sit on the couch at home and go, this is terrible. These boys aren't, they're not entertaining us. But we're out there trying, and that's what people have to be reminded of too. And the other thing is, I think for kids coming up along, at their level, it's very different when you get to a professional level and into an academy or, you know, when things start to get really serious. But I don't think it's going to take away from the enjoyment factor of kids coming through the underage systems in Ireland, England, Wales, all over the world. I think they're still going to enjoy what they're doing. They're out there with their best friends, running around with the ball, firing it around. They don't know anything about patterns or bonus points or, you know what I mean? But that's the way it is at a young age. They just want enjoyment. And I think, you know, for us as professionals, obviously, we'll see what World Rugby bring. But for the younger generation, you know, they still love it. I go home to Tullow and I go out there on a Sunday morning and there's 250 kids playing. I don't see any of them asking, hey, what type of brand of rugby are you playing this week?
I think what's great is, like, you know, as a kid, the fundamentals are what makes rugby great, you know, being in a team environment, playing with your mates and, you know, just having fun. And, you know, probably thankfully they can't kick until they're 13. So that makes it easier for them to play a bit more.
if both of you could make one change, what would that be? What would you change? What do you need to answer?
I think we've just had Finn join in, has he? Finn, how are you doing, boy?
Yeah, I'm on it.
That is called passing the buck, Foxy.
We're correcting rugby. Have you got any points to add? What's wrong with rugby at the moment?
Take the scrums out, but that would stop a lot of guys playing, I suppose. They take up a lot of time.
Sean, you're out.
Yeah.
just have backs on the field, no forwards.
Yeah, that'd be better, I think.
How you doing, Finn? All right?
Yeah, I'm good. Not too bad yourself.
Yeah, can't complain, boy. Can't complain.
Zeebo's probably there in the background somewhere, Finn, is he?
Nah, he's not here today. Someone.
I like the way you've just slotted in, Finn, just like completely just suddenly appeared in this conversation, and it's like you've been there from the start. How is Paris treating you? I mean, you're adding to our casualty club. We've basically got three players now who aren't playing at the moment. How's France treating you?
It's good. Obviously still in lockdown, like back home, so that's not changed. But it's good fun getting back into the boys, into the club. And I was back in training today with them all, so that was good.
How long till you're back?
I was maybe going to be this weekend, but I don't think it will be. So hopefully next weekend for the Champions Cup. We've got Bordeaux away, so this weekend. So I'll take it easy for the home game next week.
It looks like from social media and from yourself and Zeebs and a few other boys there that it's a great club and great fun to be in.
Yeah, it is. It's good fun. When we train, it's full on, obviously. But then outside of that, it's a good laugh. Everyone gets on well. There's a good environment at the club. Players and coaches, we all get on pretty well, so it's good fun. When you train, you train hard, but it's a lot of laughs on the way as well. So
I came over to film with you when I think you'd been there, 8 months or something? And you were getting to grips with your French. So where's it at now? Are you fluent?
Nah, I'm not fluent. It's obviously getting better, but I wouldn't say I'm fluent. I'll take a few more years for that, I think. But like I said, it's getting better. I'll speak to most of the boys in French now, or I'll try anyway. And I've said to them, they have to speak to me in French now, because at the start it was all just in English. Even if I was trying to speak in French, they try and practice their English, so I would find it hard to understand if there's conversations going on, because they all speak to me in English. So it's getting better now, and I'm getting the hang of it.
So do you all know each other from the Lions tour as well? You came in a little bit late to that one, Finn.
Yeah, I was only there for 10 days. So.
Did you actually see the boys?
Briefly.
Yeah, we didn't see Finn too much.
I was into two different squads by then, so I think I was on a different schedule to you boys.
you were the PM schedule.
No, what was the name? What was the name that was put on the boys? The Assassins, wasn't it?
No, I don't know. I was going to say the Bingers, but I don't know.
I think it was the Assassins or something. Is that, are the Assassins gone out again?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Finn, we've been talking about rugby getting a bit of stick at the moment for not being the most exciting, particularly in the Autumn Nations Cup. I think that that's a can that you certainly don't carry. There must be an awful lot of pressure on you because you're always talked about as being flamboyant and just, you know, such a good player to watch. Is that something that you can sort of see in yourself or when you watch back your matches?
I don't know. I don't really see it myself. It's just how I like to play and how we play here at Racing, which is good fun. I think, yeah, watching these Autumn Tests, there's been a lot of kicking in them all. I think even like the France, who was it, weekend? France-Italy, there's like 40-odd kicks each team or something. It was like 45 kicks a team, which is crazy. So,
yeah.
Some people are saying that the teams that kick most are the teams that win in, which is, I suppose the stats show that, but I think there's kind of just a lot of kick tennis going on now. So for people watching it, it's not really that much fun, you know. I think over here at Racing, you have to kick at times, but we like to use the short attacking kicks and as well as clearing our lines when we have to. But you know, we've got some great players in the backs and the forwards, so holding onto the ball is maybe better for us than it is to kick it away. Half of our game plan, just chuck the ball to Vidame and see what he does. So that makes it easy for me.
It's not a bad game plan to have, mind.
He either gives the ball to Cammy to pick and go or to carry it or to Vidame.
He is absolutely ridiculous.
In terms of your play, Finn, do you feel it's developed more since you've been in France, or is this something that you've always done, even when you were starting out in rugby, and they've just maybe, you know, let you have more confidence to do it?
I think it's probably how I've always played. I think when I came through at Glasgow, Gregor was trying to change it into a fast playing team, so that suited the way I like to play. And then with Vernet at Scotland, he did the same. And over here in France, they like to play wide, or they like to play free flowing rugby. And with Mike coming in and doing attack this year, he's big for us to play wide as well as if we have to obviously go up the jersey and play direct. But we've got the license to play this open, expansive game when we want to. And like I kind of said about, you know, the players we've got, it suits us as a team and as a group that us playing that style of rugby works well for us.
How much does that change though when you go back to Scotland then? Because obviously you've got to play with the players that you have round about you. So, you know, how much does that alter?
Yeah, it obviously changes. I think the way that I was used to attacking at Racing is slightly different to Scotland. Obviously test matches are different to club level games, so you might have to slightly adjust anyway. And like I said earlier, I think when I went back, I tried to maybe bring a few things in that we do at Racing to the Scotland setup. You know, I've not been there in, well, it was about a year that I hadn't been to the Scotland team since the World Cup. So things had changed, obviously, during the Six Nations. And then I came back in and I thought there was ways it could have maybe adapt again. So, it's maybe not as free-flowing. You know, I've not played with some of the boys in the Scotland team for, like I say, a year now. So it's kind of getting those connections again, getting those links back together. Whereas at Racing, we've got it here day in, day out, which is good.
Sean, from your point of view, like when you get a core or a collective group of players, like maybe England have had with Saracens and Ireland have definitely had with Leinster, does it make it easier for you when you're representing your country and you're alongside people that you have played alongside week in, week out?
Yeah, it definitely makes a difference. 100% it does. Because you know each other and you know what each other's going to do and what different personalities are bringing to the game. And the other thing is about it, probably the style of game. If you have a certain style you want to play, the coach is going to pick the players that he thinks is going to represent that best. But that's probably, from Leinster's point of view, they've probably been the best over the last while in Ireland, obviously. And Joe obviously coached Leinster and then he came and coached Ireland, and we kept basically the same game plan that we had with Leinster the whole way through Joe's era, which was probably a problem at the end because as Foxy said there earlier in the interview, he knew if he got into our first three phases that they were a lot more comfortable then in general phase. But you know, it does definitely make a difference knowing that your mates that you're playing with each week are there beside you. And it's a lot more comfortable. So like I like for someone coming back, like if I was asked to go back into the Ireland camp now, for instance, I think it'd be very different for me. It'd be a lot more learning from my end of it, probably, to see what they're doing now, because you're out of the loop when you're out of camp.
Familiarity is huge. I think you get, once you get those connections, like Finn's talking about, I think, you know, when I played with Hadley at club level and international level, we had a an understanding that we played more rugby together, and you know, and it definitely helps, because your connection is, you don't have to talk as much because you kind of know the traits you get because you've done it so many times. So yeah, no, I think having familiarity is a massive positive when you're playing through club into international level.
And Finn, is that something you notice because nobody else is coming over from Racing into that Scotland camp?
Yeah, but I suppose even, you know, Ali will play differently with Glasgow than the lines that I'll play with here, or Hoggy will play different to Zeebs or Kirtley or whoever at fullback, and everyone just, like you said, it plays differently, and the connections you have at clubs so much stronger than at international, unless you're maybe Ireland and you've got the Leinster boys coming through, or England with the Saracens boys. I remember when I first joined Scotland, there were 16 guys in the squad that was from Glasgow. So we played week in, week out, trained with each other all the time. So, like Johnny said, it's kind of like you don't have to chat as much, you don't have to do as much. You just know what you're looking for, what the guy outside is going to look for, what the guy inside is going to do, so you can react much better off him without having to train it that much during the week. It just flows easier, I think. So, and being a 10 coming back, it's quite an important position for the attack, especially to try and link with these players quickly. You know, I'm still good mates with them all, but I don't train or play as much with them, so they'll develop and change over the last couple of years. So I've got to kind of adapt to how they've changed and what they do now compared to what they used to do.
When you were at Glasgow, I think you shared a flat with Ali Price, and you were there was always a talk on your Instagram of the bromance, and then it seemed to happen with Zeebo. Sean, you know Zeebo pretty well. Tell us something that we could say on air, and Finn can back it up.
What do I have on Zeebo? Nah, he fancies himself as this rapper. So he does. He definitely thinks he's able to rap properly. He's done it a few times. His sister is married to one of the guys of Hermitage Green, and they got him up on stage one year at a festival, and he's done this bit of a rap. And since then, I think he thinks he's a full on rapper, but he can actually pull it off though. Zeebs can pull that stuff off, and his dance moves are pretty epic as well, in fairness to the man. So he's loving life over there, and so is Donegal Ryan. So it's funny actually seeing Donegal Ryan in that context of people. Donica's a big farmer from home, like, so he definitely wouldn't be rapping or dancing. He's the complete opposite of Zeebs. But good lads to have, and they're being missed back home, that's for sure.
And good for you to have people like that around you as well, Finn, when you've moved to a different country and it was quite tight in Glasgow, and you've got to sort of find your place again, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. When I first met Zeebs the first night I moved over, we both stayed in the same hotel for about a week or 10 days before we got our houses. So I bumped into him the first night. He was out walking out a walk with his kids. And we just clicked straight away, which is good fun. You know, he's easy to get on with, and he's always having a laugh, so it's good. And then we moved into the houses, which were like, I don't know, 500 metres, if that, round the corner from each other. So they sort of share lifting and training and out of training, and we get on. I got on really well. But like you say, it kind of helped us both being English speaking, and we both kind of had the same sort of jokes or the same sort of chat, which was good. So I had someone else to kind of do the starting off period with, although his French is much better, because that's from Martinique. So, you know, he was telling me we'll be in the same French classes, and I thought, right, okay, I've got someone to do French with. But then when we turned up, he understood pretty much everything, so he was slightly further ahead.
I think those groups of expats people, they come, it's become your family. Like when I was in France, like when you move out on your own, those Kiwis, Aussies, South Africans, like, because you're not away from your families, they become your family. And I remember, you know, you lean on them for help being away from family. So it, like you said, you create bonds then, and you come pretty tight with them. And like you can see that, you know, Zeebo, you two are big mates. And I think, you know, it's an important thing when you move away from home is getting a friendship and a bond with those expat players.
What have you made of Scotland over the Autumn Nations Cup, Finn?
Defence has been a lot better. We've not let in that many tries. Could obviously get better on attack. So I think that was one of the first two games. So I tried to say a few things that we do here at Racing that we can maybe bring in with Scotland, but I've not been there obviously the last 4 weeks. So it's been hard to, I suppose, chat to the boys and get a few points across, but also I'm focusing on being back here now. But I think, you know, they're doing all right. Like I say, defence is coming on well, the discipline's good. We just need to work on that attacking side and try and start scoring some more tries, which will then obviously help us win games. But no, it's all right. We've won three of the four games is pretty positive that we've played.
You know, when you said there about you've been, because I know sometimes you're in camp and even when if you're injured, you're still involved in things. And John, I think you were doing the same when you got injured. Is that what happens? Just to sort of people outside of it, to senior players stay and help out and try and direct the side a little bit. Is that expected of you?
For me, they kept me around because I'm fines master in camp, and I had to make sure that the boys were running a tight ship. So all I was doing was making sure I was getting a bit extra cash off the boys for the kitty, you know. So that was pretty much my role the last few weeks, trying to get back fit again. But no, it's something that, you know, you'd like to be involved, you'd like to help out. You know, we've got quite a young squad, and just being around the young centres, talking to them, seeing how they're finding it. And, you know, it is good to be involved because, you know, you want to be playing, but if you can help out someone to perform at a level, you know, that's a positive. So, you know, there is work to be done, even though when you're injured, you can't get on the field.
I think when you sit back as well, and when you are injured and you kind of sit back and take stock of the way you're trying to do things, and you actually pick up some stuff that you mightn't necessarily have the exact right thing or be doing the right thing on the field when you're actually out there. And when you actually sit back and you're actually helping coaches do different bits and pieces, you kind of get it a lot more and understand it a lot more. And you can relate that then to the younger boys, as Foxy said, because that's something I found actually stepping back away from it and looking at certain areas of the game where we can improve. And overseeing a little bit of that, especially when you're one of the older lads, and getting the younger lads into the video room then and giving them a bit of knowledge on what's going on and why we're doing what we're doing, you know. And I'm sure it's the same for Finn.
Yeah, I think if I was at Glasgow, I might have been in there helping out or trying to look at the attacking side of it, how we can get better there. It's different me being over here in France. I'm kind of excluded from it all now. I'll still chat with Dunkey a little bit in Ali, and I'll see what I thought of the games, like whenever it is, and how they can get better. But it's difficult if you're not in camp and not seeing what's going on in the meetings and during the sessions. So I'm trying to kind of watch and give a little bit of advice from outside, but it's difficult when you're only watching the game at the weekend and not really knowing what messages are getting said through the week.
Have you missed being in Scotland, Finn? I know you've just signed for Racing for longer, but is there any aspects of being at home and playing for Glasgow that you've missed?
The weather. Cash money. Cash.
the weather.
The weather.
The Scotland sun.
No, there's not much that I've missed, to be honest. It's much easier probably back home, you know, where everything is. It's a smaller city. You can get around easier and certain things like that, but there's not much that I've really missed that much. Maybe being able to just speak English with everyone and get my point across much easier would help a little bit here, but I think I'm getting the hang of that now.
Let's take a look at the matches that we've got this week, because it is the finals weekend of the Autumn Nations Cup, and it's England-France in the final. Finn, we know that the situation in France means that they basically cannot pick their strongest side. I think there's 121 caps between the 31-man squad that they have. England-France, who would you fancy in that one then?
Yeah. Nah, France. No, I don't know. I think it'll be England are playing well. I don't know, France have got the flair, so I'm going to back France, you know, all the way for that one. There's a few boys at Racing, they got their first cap last week, so I'm going to be cheering them on. And
yeah, not controversial at all. The Scottish man says France. Sean, what do you think?
Yeah.
I don't think they'll have enough experience to beat England. But on the flip side of that, bunch of young French guys, they'll just go out there and they'll play, won't they? And that's when the French are most dangerous. So it could be an exciting game. Hopefully it's not like that one where we actually we played Scotland years ago to win the Six Nations, and France and England were playing after us for the that was the craziest day ever.
With Noah Nakataki was causing carnage out there, I think. I remember watching that as well.
Yeah.
I'm going to go England. They look extremely strong and organised. And they're just at work. The work rate at the moment is huge. And I think they're very organised in defence. So, unfortunately, I don't see the French getting by them.
Foxy, Ireland, Scotland, you can have the first word.
Oh, I don't know. I think, you know, Scotland, I think, as Finn said, look really organised in defence. I think, is it Steve Tandy, the defence coach now?
Yeah.
A Welshman organising the Scotland team in defence. I'd go Scotland, you know. I'll back the Scottish boys.
Foxy.
Yeah. Relationship over, is it, Shorty?
I'll go with Ireland. I know they're in a bit of a transition, so I think it's going to be a tight game. Scotland have improved massively in their D, and their scrum has been very good. So they'll be two big areas. But I think Ireland will be pretty annoyed at the way they played the second half the last day. I think Robbie and Johnny could be back in for it as well. They were in full train today by social media. So if they're back, it'll help a lot. And we might see a little bit more in attack than we did the last day. So I'm gonna say Ireland.
Finn?
I know. I think, you know, Scotland, like you said, their defence is really good. I don't know. I think both teams, it depends who they want to play. Like you say, Ireland are going through a transition kind of year. Scotland might try out a few new guys this weekend. I think it could be a game of kind of chess, almost waiting to see which team almost cracks first or which team makes a mistake. I don't know if the teams will go out there to win it or if they'll go out there to not lose it. I think for me, the way Ireland play, it could just be kicking the ball up in the air and letting the wingers go after it. On the flip side, Scotland might try the same, just to try and wait and see who cracks. So I'm going to go Scotland, but I can't see it being a high scoring game.
All right. Finn, you can give us your Wales Italy.
I don't know. I think
Italy.
Oh, come on.
I think Wales might win, but Italy will probably play the better rugby. I think they're playing now, they're changing up quite a lot. Like against Scotland, they played with 10 and the 12, a can at 12 and the young guy at 10, and they actually played some open rugby with good kicks, so they're playing pretty good rugby, but they die out in the last 20 minutes. So I think it'll be quite a good game to watch, and for Italian attacking, like, they were for me the better team in the Scotland game the first half, and then died out the last 20. So I think Wales will win, but I think Italy will be right in there until the last, you know, 20-25 minutes, I think.
Do you agree, guys?
Yeah, I agree with that. Wales won't be. They'll stick with him for a period of time, the Italians, but Wales will come good in the end. That'll be their second. Hopefully, their first. Is it their first win? Second win.
Yeah, no, I think as the boy said, yeah, I'll agree with him.
Just to finish off, how good will it be if we actually just see Fiji getting a match? I mean, I think we all really went into this competition hoping that we'd see what they could do, and Foxy, it's just not worked out well.
No, you know, it's, you know, hugely unfortunate. Well, as a player, you're probably quite glad you don't have to play Fiji, because, you know, on their day, they're as dangerous as you know, any team in the world. But yeah, you know, hopefully they can get a game and just showcase what they can do. Obviously, be up against them not being able to train fully, but you know, if we can see that against Georgia, because you know Georgia deserve another game as well to show what you know how they've improved as well. So that would be a competitive game, I'm sure. And I think Fiji would be after some. You know, after the loss they had in the World Cup last year, so that, you know, that could be a tasty affair.
Baron Cotter's Fiji Finn.
Yes, I was looking forward to seeing them play as well. I think Fern will be good for them, and I know Ben Vola from here, obviously. So I think Vern would put some simple but effective structure in the Fijian, but still allow them to play with their expansive offloading game. So I was actually really excited to see how they. How they played under Vern. So I think they'll be good, and it'll be a really good game to watch this weekend.
And Sean, in terms of Fiji and Georgia, you know, it's not one that you would head into the start of this competition thinking we'd like to watch this one necessarily. But actually, because the way that we've seen Georgia progress, like you were talking about at the start of this programme, because we haven't seen Fiji at all, you know, it's an interesting matchup.
It's probably going to be the most interesting game of the whole autumn series, to be fair, because Fiji will, you know what you're going to get with Fiji. So they're going to throw the ball around and they're going to throw outrageous offloads and they're going to take risks. But on the back, on the other side of that, as Finn said, I'm looking forward to seeing the bit of structure that Vern has brought to their play that'll actually bring their game to a different level. But it'll be an entertaining game, no doubt about it. We have one of our number eights, Albert, is playing for Fiji. So be interesting to see Big Bad Albert out there as well. He's a bit of a unit. So he has his hands the size of, I don't know, they're like shovels. Like he goes around with the ball in one hand, and you'd be hoping that he doesn't throw this outrageous offload at times. But it'd be interesting to see him playing now, and I'm looking forward to that game actually at the weekend.
Yeah, it would be good to wrap this competition up and then head into Champions Cup. We'll talk about that next week. But Finn, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. It's been a pleasure. Foxy, Sean, good luck with your recoveries as well. We'll see you on the pitch soon and we'll see you back here very shortly. Thanks very much to you at home as well for choosing House of Rugby. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby Season 3 on Joe.